the British. It's always very difficult to read the matches. Just a wonderful voice. As long as everybody. So anyway, I started. It's 2 points. Two sonnets from my new book. And I had just written the book, and I sent it off, and the person who reads my poem has a habit, if you like, to do just to take it off the top. And then write back with more. Coffee. And then one day I was in town, I knew that there was something missing in the middle. And then one day I was in town in the library, and they had a blue tree bar on the library, and I saw a book. And the minute I saw this book, I knew that I was going to have a long collaboration with this book. It's called the Nether Sheet, the Ship of the Fools. It was written in the 1492, Christopher Columbus is from the Nether. And a fair day, it was the best seller in Europe for 200 years. And the idea of the book was that he took epigraphs from the town written by a man called Sebastian Brandt. And he took epigraphs obviously the same. And he wrote poems or meditations on them. So I said to myself, I'm going to write a series of poems. I'm going to take exactly the same epigraphs and I'm going to write a series of poems. From the really kind of commentary on the stuff for this one, I'm just reading through it, I think that's not yet. The poem is called The Wrong Good Life, and the epigraph which is in the book is, who measures heaven, earth and sea, thus seeking lower or deity, who let him beware. Wise old number cruncher Archimedes would sit on the beach at solitude, drawing lines and angles in the sand, knowing the sea would roll in and wipe out his day's work. He'd start again, walking the shoreline. Clear his head, he'd pick whatever debris caught his eye, bits of blossom, bric-a-brac, enough to make a mandala, picture flower people spread on the pavement of a busy shopping mall, that shoppers curse under their breath. Yet, tiptoe round, proving this hypothesis that the heart rules rather than the head, will not allow beauty to be disturbed. My next poem is Comment on Time, which is a series of 11 sonnets. And this poem is more in the line of dance, it's kind of a comment on the time period. And one of the things that makes me extremely angry is when I see advertisements on television, whether advertising, for the banks are advertising that they give you these loans at very cheap rates. And even still with the housing market gone low, and they're still at it. There's one company called GE Money, and they're actually still at housing. they're trying to get people into the system, so they'll be Islamic slaves for the best years of their lives. So this poem is actually about that. It's called In Hoc, and the epigraph is from Grant again. Who in his borrowing to free the payment state, the wolf will do. Meanwhile, the ass will kick his knee. The man who is cagey when he borrows has few cares and fewer sorrows. Trust not the man, he is not true, who is affable and then unsure. He'll bleed you dry if you don't pay. Strip your roof, lead in the sky. With wolf, he's been a glamour come, came our pound of flesh and bone. Your belongings in the bag you'll go to live at Simon with Wicklow. Hobo, hobo, you'll get a chance that reminds you of the old school rhyme. And donkeys, once again, don't fail to give them room. Don't hold out for it. More than enough. So you want to know how many kisses will satisfy my lust for you? As many as the polluted particles of air drifting over Cork Harbour between the old head of Kinsale and the weeping spire of Cove. Or as many stars that see the secret sex in the quiet night, this many kisses will suffice. More than enough to rise me, too many for the nosy neighbours, digital cameras clicking everywhere. This is the first of two versions of poems by Catullus that I've been working on. Well, actually, there's a lot of them, but I'm just going to read two. The second one, the language is a bit choice, so I apologise in advance, but I'm trying to sort of get the spirit of Catullus. Hurricane. Hey you, fucker, softer than rabbit fur, goose down, my love's sweet earlobe, or an old man's wrinkled dick, resting in cobwebs and neglect. But when others begin to nod in the moonlight, you're as untrustworthy as a hurricane. You'd better return the jacket you've stolen, as well as the scarf and the iPod you flash around, wanker, as though your own. Get your thieving mitts off them, or I'll use my brand new boots to tattoo your lousy arse. Break some ribs, stamp on your fingers. You'd enjoy that, wouldn't you? Tossed around like a puny boat in a storm. Suggested that we read together. He spoke about those poems, about the Catholicist poems, and by pure coincidence, most recent poem that I've written is, I can't actually translate because you need to be in the zone, and it's in the zone kind of good to put your head around. But this poem actually came, I finished reading translation and version of Catullus' poem, because his own brother died and he was an ode to him. And I have two lines from the ode here in the middle of the poem. And this brother, this poem is dedicated to my own brother, who died in 1989, and the poem actually has a basically background music. poem called Enamorata, Memory of Danger. I won't talk to you again, or hear your voice, or see you again, brother, dearer than life. I loved you forever ago, and may go to celebrate you, as under the apple tree, Cockney sign of the fate of his lost idea. I sing you these lines from Catullus' ode to his brother, C. Quintilius Martius, so you won't think your words are lost in air, of the thoughtfulness of your nature forgotten. Today, for example, in Mount Alvernia Hospital, he took us to the apple tree and the grounds of that. Soft the wind fell until he came up with an arm full of the most glorious cocoa. First heart from Mama, you said, offering the world. And this poem, I'm going to hand you back to church tonight, is about my mother, and she's the love of my mother. And actually, this book is actually about my mother. I call it Babushka because that's, you know, the Russian grandmother. And it's very hard to actually write about mothers because they're too close to everybody. It's kind of like a wallpaper. It's easier to write about fathers and mothers from past to actually write about them. But it's kind of an accent to write about, you know. But I think I got this one. And actually this poem was in the last edition of the Gregory of the Mothers anthology, so forth. And he knew very suddenly that he had information of his own mortality, as people do. Curtain call. Words are drawn to your mother, though you were hard of hearing. Words from the telly in the corner, and the characters talk loud. Words from papers you cut pieces out of, and tucked under you. A column that lifted you to your level, though you were as small as a child, when you stood at the arm of a chair, looking beyond it at a place we reach before we walk, surprising us, which follows meaning in a line would meet the tune once the curtain was closed and the light turned on. I'm afraid I don't have a poem about my mother, but I have the next best thing, which is an Albanian love poem. This was actually, it's not actually a translation, it's a version from the a poem called Scandalous Song by the Albanian poet Megemi. Scandalous Song. Pale woman, you carry the world's sins, and mine too, heavy on your shoulders. Those shoulders touched by divine lips. You wander the streets, a lost angel. Pale woman, cold as death, ashen face, your eyes the colour of lost desire, lips pressed tight, restraining sighs, you walk over my grave as you pass. To and from prayer you come and go, eyes averted, lips clamped shut in contemplation. Where would we be without you? Yet you cannot stop a new day dawning. O beautiful woman, you save yourself the saints, smoulder before them like an altar candle, and undress. How I envy the saints, that you cannot hold back my love. You and I, my darling, are bound together, yet each being pulled in different ways. The battle is on, your prayers against mine,
It's all a question of belief. And this next one was written as part of a series. Trevor Joyce's website Soundeye for the Poetry Festival did a series of poems called Offtext, in which people were invited to respond to other poems, and it developed this huge web of poetry. It's well worth checking out. I think some of it's still on the internet. And this was one contribution I made. Again, it's a version, and it's from the Chinese Li Ho, and it's called Gracious Network. Seated on the terrace as the stars plummet into the darkening pool, an unidentified figure sips from a glass. Midlife slips away. Migrant birds proclaim change. Hibiscus blossoms bleed into the soil. Long neglect lies ahead, but certain words never quite forgotten. And just before I hand back to Eugene, I'd just like to read one more. It was actually published in the Children's Book of Poetry, though, as far as I remember, it's not a children's poem, but I didn't tell them that. Eugene and Mary here were just talking about creative writing exercises, and this, I suppose, comes from one of those. It's the exercise of imagining you are a particular object and writing about it. A cigarette in an ashtray. The barroom clock hands have almost stopped, caught between tick and tock, those partners in time. My life is in ashes. Wistfully I watch my grey soul slipping guiltily out, going to join the gathering clouds above. I've lain untouched for some time, burning alone amongst the remains of former friends. No hand reaches out for me. Already I feel smaller, older, and strangely short of breath. I miss the ordinary, the flourish in the air, the regular kiss of warm puckered lips, the fire in my belly, and the smell of you. My only wish, as I watch another cigarette being lit, is that they find some cure for this ending of life. Any minute now, the barman will call time.
I'm just going to read three poems and then make a revision one. One of the things I like, as Paul said, I've always written, most of the stories in school, and I've never stopped, and if you're not one of those people who just forget, like an older budget block. And every day I ask myself, why am I writing poems? I will think about poems, whatever, I'll be able to say it's a waste of time. And one of the things, interesting things about poetry is keep it in reach. That if you weren't in the circle, if you weren't interested in poetry, you wouldn't need them. And the other interesting thing is you come across voices that say something that moves your life on, it unlocks some aspects of your life, holds you back. It's good. That's going to make a difference to you. And this is one of those poems. Now, I discovered the friend Hartman, the English poet. I discovered him a couple of years ago. And I just liked him because he changes his profession. I want to be conscious of poetry. I'm very subconscious, I'm very opinionated, which I shouldn't believe. So this is a poem that I think that they just worked for me and it's brought me to town. Poem called Chase and Take. After reading a poem by a person in the past. I ask you for a poem. You offer me a leaf. I say it is not good enough. I ask you for a poem. You say that a leaf will do. It is as impeccably dressed and more pleasing to the eye than any image I could make. I am indignant. How easy it is to offer a leaf. How absurd. Anyone can offer a leaf. I ask you for a poem. And so we compose a tragedy about how such a simple thing as a leaf becomes more and more difficult to offer. About how, as you get older, even the most impeccably charmed out poems become more difficult to accept. One of the things that I find about getting older is that you start losing faith in moving people up. And one of the things I liked about the translating Gotthard Gudrich, whose son Latvia, is that he all his songs about love, and they're about lost love, and they're about sitting down in the faces of Latvia, apparently there's no mountains in Latvia, and apparently the wind comes in from the north, the Arctic, and apparently a lot of poems in Latvia about the wind, the image of the wind. So this is such an impact on their lives. And I did this poem, and this poem is actually my own poem. It was called Gudrich, the Habit of just writing very short poems. And I couldn't hand it up a manuscript with a big book. I just finished short poems. I had to have long ones. I actually linked in them. This poem is called Tai Chi. When you sit in the hand of your Tai Chi, the elements are moved. Winds breathe your air, drink from your eyes. In my world, I'm yours. We live and breathe each other. Sleepy birds stir themselves out of a stupor when you unfurl your fingers. Time inside your hands. Define thinkers, those thick-skinned disbelievers, about as useful as a stone you trip over running for the tide to take you to the sea of all things stars. I run to where you sit, tracing my face with your hand on the big canvas of the sky. And the other thing I liked also about the Gunther Gudrich's portrait was portrait in the Baltic, is that it's absolutely existential. There is no God whatsoever. Everything is absolute. Everything is bleak. And that's okay too, but I'm just on one side of it, isn't it? There's more, there are more things in heaven and earth than the things of your philosophy. And this is one of the poems, again, that kind of comes across with this idea of the bleakness of it all. But then again, there's other things as well, you know, it's not just the hourglass, pumped out hourglass. I'm a desert, an ocean of sand. I write letters to the wind, The wind behind them hung red. All the ghosts flowed in the sky. Who knows how it dawned on me? This is not the life I was born to live. Have I nothing better to do with my time than trying to justify fear? Sand sticks in the cavity of my teeth. I walk in this shadowland, this hall of mirrors. I can't see myself in. I'm a desert, a huge sandglass. Time teaches us how to count. I tried in the beginning, but now I think to myself, what's the point? If somebody asks me the time in the future, I shrug my shoulders and look away.
Last one from me. Usually mentioned about the characters you meet in the poetry circle, and this final poem is about one of those who some of you may know. He lives in Kinsale. His name is Desmond O'Grady, fine poet, and there's quite a few references to his work in this. The poem's written in the form of a festina for those of you who are interested. And those of you who aren't interested, it's still in the form of the festina. The poet returns with his catch. Each springtime you make your return from distant winters on stormy seas, where navigation is a form of verse, a careful orientation along the dark edge of Europe and beyond. The time has come to see the Hooker's Harbour once more, to forsake the coffee bars once a refuge, and mull over the winter's return. This town where you spread your lifetime's catch stands witness to death from overseas. But do not forget the rest of us in the dark and struggling with a fish or line of verse. Every lifelong odyssey has its verse, each cadence captured only once. You have cast your net into dark, brooding oceans and annually returned with glimpses of jewels from strange seas and fishermen's tales of the best of times. This trawling tradition connects us to times long since disappeared beneath the waves, to verse hauled in from the depths of ancient seas. The secret is to feel no fear, to enter once again lost libraries and ports, to return anew with eyes like phosphorescence in the dark. Pounds knew the value of scanning the dark ages, culling versions of a different time, until he too began to sink, to return to the past and not come back. His verse all that remains. Desmond, more than once I've heard you tell of those ice-cold seas. In this pub, where Selkirk set out for unknown seas, you speak to me of the memory of darkness and the need to seek light. All at once, I realise the scheme that binds the passage of time and the absolute necessity of working in verse, working towards the next return. As you said once, there comes a time when ideas slip to the sea. It is in such dark moments I turn to birth. Words are what return. Thank you.
I just have to read one more. Before I do, I want to thank Paul Casey for inviting us. This is a good thing. And I want to especially say it's very true with Matthew Gibbon. I've read with him before, and I always enjoy it. My last poem is called Clear Air. as in the on the cross of Jesus, on the cross of crucifixion. And I was in St. Pembroke Cathedral on Sunday night. It was my cold air, but there was an American called Brett, he was a Shander, I think, and he did St. John's Gospel. He loved the Gospel and he performed the Gospel of St. John. And I remember that when I was a child, this was the background of our lives. And that was wonderful to have that background from the first century. And it's still there, it's something that we take for granted because we see it, because we don't come to it. But anyway, this poem is about the killing of a pig. And in the evening, the pig was killed. She was hung up on a ladder. And the whole body of the pig was put in a shroud, a sheet. And I always imagined that as a child, that it was like the being on top of the cross, because the pig was actually hanging up on a ladder on the cross. And the whole experience actually left him, because this is the point of the boat. Hear that. Memory of King Carol, he was going to kill the pig. The fifth day of the year was when King Carol fell from the pig. His pocket bulging with sticky feet, but bullseyes. A treat for us children, where he talked with Robert and went to doubt. We didn't care about the pig, growing huge and smelling in her chamber. We closed our ears to her screams on the way to the table, so long as she didn't bite or kick us with the leg we were given to hold. Lucky, it was Tess's job to hold the pan for the blood under the throat. I would have missed seeing the inside. The heart was like our own. The bladder that was blown into a football for us to kick like we were Pele in the World Cup of John Joe shooting from the foster. Heroes in our own minds. Until night fell, and the ghosts beginning to gather around the body on the table made us run in off the ghostly arch.
Well, thank you, Regina Connell.